Well, welcome everybody to our podcast during our 1 and 2 Samuel series. It's great you could join us. We got to answer most of the questions on the weekend, but we have some other ideas we'd like to throw out there and discuss. So with me today is the Reverend Wayne Tilsley, who preached at 8 o'clock. Welcome, Wayne.
Thanks, Paul.
Good to see you. Yeah. Good to see you, mate. And Keith Baker, our senior minister, who preached at 5 and 7 on Sunday.
Thanks,
so
mate.
Welcome, mate.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to see you guys. So we looked at the anointing of Saul of sorts, and also Israel asking for a king like the nation. So we've gone from the high point of chapter 7, where God is taking care of their enemies and things are good under Samuel, to this downward spiral, the beginning of it, like we talked about. I think everyone talked about it from Romans 1. I was just interested to start off the discussion. Can you just tell us like one thing that really caught you as you were preparing for last Sunday that sort of thought, oh, I hadn't really seen that before? Can you just give us an example of something that caught you guys out? Well, not caught you out, but stood out to you. Who'd like to go first?
I'll jump in. The section we had was from 8 through to 12.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in chapter 8 because I think that sort of sets it up with the asking for a king like a nations, and spent some time there. But the thing that really struck me was the end of chapter 12. So chapter 12 is sort of Samuel's farewell speech. He's old. He's about to retire from that public role of being the judge and all that sort of stuff because there is now a king. And I was struck by the declaration of how evil Israel's request was, and how God kind of underlines it, puts it in bold and italics, and highlights it by that, you know, that awesome demonstration of the rain on the wheat fields that were dry. God's people must have been thinking, we have really blown it. We are toast. You know, we should be toast in God's eyes. And yet the last thing there, Samuel says, no, but come back to God, because his heart is for the glory of his name, and he will be glorified because he chose you even though you weren't worthy, and he will forgive you even though you aren't worthy. So turn back to him, because you actually have nowhere else to go. All the idols are useless. And just that incredible grace in the face of evil, I found, tremendously encouraging for someone like me who blows it with God. And you think, is this it? Is this the time when God's had enough? Mm-hmm. And you go, no, in Jesus, his heart is always, no, there's forgiveness, and come back, because there is nowhere else to go, and I chose you. You're precious. Mm. Like, wow, that's just overwhelming grace. Mm. You know, people talk about this, the false contrast of the harsh God of the Old Testament and the forgiving God of the New Testament. No, but read 1 Samuel 12. It's the same God. He's got the same incredibly gracious heart right there. That's going to point forward to what Jesus is going to come to do. So that really leapt off the page to me.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Mm. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, I was interested that Samuel was hiding in the Saul was hiding in the baggage. I was really like, wow, you know, what's going on?
Comedy, mate.
Yeah, it was a comedy, because he, when they introduce him, you know, he's a head and shoulders above everyone else. He stands out in the crowd. He's a handsome guy. He's the sort of guy you want to follow, a great leader. Wow, he'd be, you know, I thought straight away he could be on my basketball team. He'd be good. and you'd love to have someone like that playing with you and doing things. And then he's anointed as king, and, you know, with Samuel, a sort of private sort of thing. He knows what's going to happen. And then he's chosen, but he's not there, and they have to go and find him, and he's in the baggage. So he's obviously, what's going on? He was fearful. I couldn't understand, you know, what's going on with him being fearful at this point. He obviously feels out of his depth, or he's concerned or worried about what's going to happen now at being king, because it is a new position. Mm-hmm. No precedent before for that. And it just reminded me sometimes how we, or I, can feel out of my depth when, you know, God opens up a ministry or provokes me to go and do something which I really don't want, maybe want to do. And I feel I'm out of depth. I can't do that. And it's looking to yourself, which I think that's what Saul was looking to himself at that time rather than God. Mm. And that's not the sort of leader you want as a king. You want someone who's going to, when it's hard, going to look to God, rely on God more rather than shrink back and, you know, look to yourself and be scared. And it just made me think about how do I lead and how important it is just to keep looking to God when things are tough and going wrong and not fall into the trap of just looking to myself and hiding, you know, as he did, pulling away, really denying God the right and position of being in charge of my life and directing what I do. So, yeah, that hiding in the baggage spoke a lot to me that way. Yeah.
Thanks, Wayne.
That's really good. Do you think Saul hiding in the baggage is the narrator telling us that Saul wasn't suitcaseable to be king?
Yeah, it's a nice one. Good one.
There are no words.
That works. My apologies to our listeners. Alex, our producer, is just shaking his head behind the desk over
Will
there.
I edit this out?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. They're really great insights. And it's amazing when you're preparing to teach God's word how these things come out. I was fascinated by the fact that they were asking for a king like the nations, and then and God's response is, they haven't rejected you, Samuel, because Samuel's displeased. Mm. They've rejected me as their king. Mm. So God is making the point that why they're rejecting him. So I don't know if it's a total rejection of God, but that may be another discussion, but it's certainly God as their king, the one who would lead them. And the reason it sort of struck me was, if I go back to 1 Samuel 7, there's a sentence in verse 14 of 1 Samuel 7 that says, "And there was peace between Israel and the Amorites." And this little line sort of struck me because we haven't heard about the Amorites before. We've heard about the Philistines and how much of a problem they are to Israel, but not the Amorites. It kind of came out of nowhere. And I wasn't sure what to do with it. And, you know, people who are much smarter than me were sort of saying, isn't it nice that there was peace between Israel and the Amorites? But when I tied it together with Israel asking for a king like the nations, the Amorites are the nations around them or living amongst them, and rejecting God as their king. So are they taking on the king or even the gods of the Amorites? Because remember, as you guys said on the weekend, there's a generation difference, maybe 30 or 40 years. So we've gone through the whole wilderness thing again, that kind of generational change. And so if the Amorites are people that this new generation are mixing with, then that's what they're seeing. That's what they know. Mm. And I was wondering whether the influence of the Amorites, how much that had in the requests of the Israelites who went to Samuel. Because the other thing I have to draw into this is Deuteronomy 7, where God says when you enter the land, you need to take over and get rid of these nations. And Amorites were one of those nations that they were supposed to remove from the land that God was giving them, and they haven't. And here's evidence of it again, just before they ask for a king. And in Deuteronomy 17, they ask for a king, which is after God has given this instruction through Moses to take over the land. So I'm just wondering what you think. I'm sort of out on a limb here because the commentators don't go there, about whether we could, I know it's speculative, but how much influence maybe the Amorites have had on the Israelites. And that's maybe part of our issue. How much are we syncretizing with the people around us and not considering what things we're thinking and the influence on us, which may have seeped in. Can I say seeped in to the people of Israel? I don't know.
Well, that was the issue we looked at in the Judges series, wasn't it? Because you've got the same sort of issue there where the people of God just easily accommodate all of the worldviews of the nations around them. And you think, well, that isn't that, you know, one of the people think, oh, that's nice. And, you know, that's sort of peaceful and all that. Except those worldviews are toxic against Israel's God and for his people, because they lead them astray from the one source of truth and love. They lead them astray from their covenant with the God who saved them. So, so it could be the case that the Amorite influence there is one of the reasons they asked for a king.
Yeah.
And it may be that So that could be the reason amongst, you know, the other nations that they keep battling against seem to have kings, and sometimes they lose against them, and so they keep going, well, it works for them. Why can't we look exactly like that? Yeah. Maybe that would work for us.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, and you point out the, you know, in chapter 7 and in chapter 6, God is clearly in the narrative the one who has been leading them and fighting their battles. Yeah. And so it is then a complete rejection of saying of God being their leader, God being their king, God fighting their battles for them. They're saying, no, we want a king who looks like the other nations to fight our battles. So
yeah.
I don't know how much of a limb you're out on. I think it's quite plausible.
It could be a contributing factor.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of chapter 7, it talks about the Israelites getting rid of all their Baals and Asherah poles and things like that, which was part of the Amorite religion. And maybe that's a contributing factor too. You get the king, you get the gods. And so that's why it's evil in chapter 12, as you pointed out. Maybe it's contributing to that as well.
Yep.
Did you want to weigh in, Wayne?
I was just struck too by the idea that, you know, Samuel's saying, you know, remember this, remember what God has done, remember who he's been to you, remember, remember, remember. And rather than being distracted by these other groups around you and thinking, hey, look at them, remember the past, remember how God has been there and done all these things. And particularly when God's done these victories, a lot of them he's just done by himself. There hasn't been any human person involved. God doesn't need people. And I was just struck the whole, because we had finished the Apostles' Creed recently, and I was struck the whole idea of how important is a statement like the Apostles' Creed that reminds us of who God is and what he's done, and just keep it in our minds and in our thinking, and so that we're conscious that, you know, we serve a living, powerful, sovereign God who's done so much for us. We're in a covenant relationship with him. I live in a world where all around me there's alternatives and things that can get my eye and, you know, say, hey, if you do this, you do that, you'll get this, you'll get this and that, and distract me from following Jesus. And I need those sort of reminders to say, no, I've got to keep focused. I can fall into the trap of the Israelites here and just be seeing something that maybe looks better, but it's not. So I think that one of the things that came out of this to me is the importance of remembering and the importance of things like the creed.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
And the point you made about the nature of the other nations around them, like we're tempted to think, oh, just everybody has their way and why can't everybody just have their way and it's all nice. But you kind of get a glimpse of what the nations around are like in chapter 11 that was part of our session. You've got Nahash the Ammonite.
Yeah.
And God's people there say, oh, let's make a treaty. He goes, yeah, sure, I'll make a treaty. Everyone gouge out their right eyes, so I utterly humiliate you and you're disabled for the rest of your life, and then we'll make a treaty. Now that's evil. That's horrific.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of culture and evil that's present in the people around them. Other nations are, you know, participate in child sacrifice and those sorts of terrible, terrible things. And so that's why God doesn't want his people mixing with those other nations and their gods, because it leads to horrific kind of behavior.
Great. That's great. I just thought maybe we could go back to one of the questions that we had on the weekend just to flesh it out a bit more. And one of those questions was, do you think the Israelites recognized that it was God that fought and won their battles for them? Because you were talking about this a minute ago, Wayne. Or do you think they had trouble recognizing it was God that had answered their prayers and not just coincidence or luck or their own efforts that made the difference? So do you think the Israelites recognized, first of all, or do you think they had trouble recognizing that it was God that had answered their prayers? Well, how would you answer that?
I think also got to remember that, I mean, it's only a couple of pages in the Bible here, but there's 20, 30, 40 years passed. So like we said before, new generations coming through, some who weren't there when it happened and maybe now looking back saying, oh, yeah, our ancestors did that, God didn't do it, or God wasn't as much. I think that's got some merit that, they're failing to see God in action He's an awesome God, a powerful God, but they don't sort of see a warrior. Here he is physically doing it. But I do think that generations coming through have lost some of the remembrance, lost some of the perspective because of that.
Mm. Yeah, and the remembrance stuff, I think, is important. Did you want to comment?
Yeah, I think that's right. They don't have the eyes of faith to view what's going on in the world, which means they haven't been shaped by remembering who their God is and what he's done in the past. Mm. It's interesting, right throughout the Old Testament, people keep coming back to the Exodus as kind of the great defining event of who God is. You know who God is because what he did in the Exodus. Mm. And that's, as the timeline moves on, that's not recent, but that's the way that people go, this is how you know who God is and this is how you know how he's working in the world because this is his character. Mm. Now, you know, maybe this generation didn't see God working because it had been 20 or 30 years since they saw something obvious, but they should have known from the Exodus. and it's a bit like us. It's a couple of thousand years since Christ, but we should know from the cross what our God is like and how he's working in our world and that he is working in the world. So we need to have the eyes of faith to process, you know, history is God's story and it's moving somewhere that God's taking it. Mm. If you take yourself out of the influence of God's word to be renewing your mind and to be renewing your eyes to see and process what's going on, you will think, well, there's nothing happening. You know, where's God? And maybe we'll do something ourselves. But so it's so important that we keep remembering God is present now and we know what he's like now because of what he's done in the past. Mm. Yeah.
And I think it's just the whole nature of human sinfulness. We want to elevate ourselves, bring God down. We want to think we're in control, we're making the difference. Mm. I think that's just in the background behind all of it.
Yeah, which is clouding our remembering.
Yes.
And remembering the Exodus and things like that. Because it's interesting in Samuel. Both the Philistines in chapter 3 or 4 remember the Exodus. Then in chapter 12, Samuel reminds them, saying, remember Aaron and Moses, the dudes that kind of, you know, well, he didn't use the word dude, but whatever he said, brought you out of Egypt. So that remembrance is not just amongst the Israelites, it's amongst the nations who remember what God has done.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it?
It is fascinating.
Yeah. Mm.
And like you said, Keith, like this is sometime after that happened. Yeah. Mm. Well, that's all the questions we have. Great discussion.
Yep.
Thanks, guys, for that. Thank you for listening in, and hopefully there's some things that you can think through or if you want to come back to us on, please feel free. But thanks, Keith, for today and Wayne and for the weekend, guys, for your service to us. And the wonderful Alex, good to see you, mate. And we hope you have a blessed week and we'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday.